And we're back here, Stripe Show podcast. Hope everybody's having a great week. Heat is on here in Florida. Big, big storms the last couple of days. 6 inches of rain in Ponte Vedra over the last 2.5 days. So we've been dodging storms, teaching a little bit here and there. Hope everybody is enjoying the summer as we move into the middle of August. The FedEx Cup playoffs are coming up. One more tournament before that. And, of course, it is in Greensboro, North Carolina, the Wyndham Championship taking place after the PGA, which is unusual. It doesn't usually do that. But it is the tournament every year that takes place before the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, which will be in Norton, Massachusetts, at TPC Boston. Really, really good, difficult golf course. I've played it a few times. But I want to talk Wyndham Championship. I want to talk about the guys that are in the field. And one guy that's on property right now is one of the top teachers. I'm going to say hottest teachers in the game right now, Justin Parson. He's at Sea Island Golf Performance Center there in Sea Island, Georgia. And he's coming to us right off property there, Sedgefield Country Club. Justin, thanks for joining us, my man. I know you're a busy, busy person.
Travis, it's good to be on. You know, one of the things about this era that we live in is that we don't have many social engagements and things to do. So I'm okay this evening, and I'm glad to be chatting to you.
Well, I know you're a busy man. You've got your lesson book. Well, it's always been professional golfers seeking your advice right now, and we're gonna get into a few of those names here on the podcast. But I'm curious. You've been on property there, Sedgefield. Great golf course there, Greensboro, North Carolina. We're going to see a lot of birdies this week. Guys are going to go low. Tell us about the golf course. How's it look and how you think it's going to play?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, a lot of the guys that I'm here with this week have kind of grown up, you know, on the East Coast, SEC, you know, whatever way you'd like to think about it. So they're kind of, you know, somewhat glad to be back on Bermuda, you know, and back in Ireland where I'm from. We don't get as much, you know, Bermuda grass play, if any. And you know, it is grainy around the greens. Plastic. The golf course is playing very well. I think it's in even better condition than it was in last year. I don't believe there's a great deal of changes. Talk to some of the caddies. Some slight green number changes. The green books changed just a little bit. I think that's more just subsidence and things like that. So, you know, it's a really good test. I like it. It doesn't force the hand with driver all the time. I think, you know, we've seen a lot of different players win over the years there. From, you know, I just had a look, Arjun Atwal to obviously JT Poston, and you know, a lot of the big name players do well as well. So you know, it gives you a nice blend of potential players and guys who can do well. And you know, I went out there and pretty much walked the back nine a couple of times. You know, over the last couple of days, we've dodged a few storms, particularly on Monday as well. And you know, I think it's going to be a good tournament. Different feel this year. You know, you can't quite lose your PGA Tour card. You can't quite lose your playing rights this year, as I understand it. Obviously, you know, everybody who's playing wants to try and progress to the playoffs. But, you know, there's a slightly less pressurized atmosphere, certainly, than there was last year.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure the players are starting to get kind of used to it. But I can imagine your players are like, man, I wish the fans were out here. You know, I mean, You just realize how important the fans are in sports. I mean, to get people energized. I know different players feed off in different ways. Some just kind of block it out, but I can imagine the majority are missing the fans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of these guys at the end of the day are performers. You know, they love to perform and they love to compete and they love to show off their skills and their talents. And you know, some in different ways to others. But I don't think there's one player who's really thinking, oh, I'm happy that the fans aren't around. You know, it's definitely a different atmosphere. You know, from a coaching point of view, I think it's probably, you know, been one of those strange deals where the players have enjoyed having the coaches around a little more, because you know, there, none of the managers are traveling. In many cases, the spouses haven't traveled. I know the wives are allowed back on property to watch now from, you know, I think from 2 weeks ago onwards, you know, which is cool for a lot of them. But you know, golf's a lonely endeavor, and it's a long old week for the guys. And you know, I know they get very well paid for it, and they, you know, they travel around the country in some style, but you know, the weeks pile up, and it's a pretty big grind, and we're in a part of the season now which has been kind of squashed to get everything in. So I just hope I'm giving them the most help that I can.
Yeah, you mentioned JT Poston. He's the defending champ in 2019, and then Snedeker won it in 18. Stenson Henrik won it 2017, Siwoo Kim in 16. Davis Love has won this event three times. And then, you know, Patrick and Webb have won it. This is a – Webb Simpson loves this golf course. Koepka's in the field. There's nine of the top 30 in the field this week. And, of course, a lot of guys in the bubble trying to get into the top 125. You got four players in the field, Brian Harman, Will Gordon, Patton Kizzire, and Harris English. I'm curious – Justin, take us, you got there on Monday around noon, I understand. And you're still there and will be coming back tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm curious, when you have four players in the field, take us through the last 2.5 days, if you don't mind, and just kind of how you've divided your time amongst these four players.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that I think is important with the players is just to be completely transparent with your time and where you're going to be. So, you know, as I got towards Sedgefield, like, you know, I gave Will a text. I haven't seen Will for a couple of weeks. We've been off. He was in Reno, and he was at, you know, up at 3M as well. So, you know, he was pretty much going to be a, you know, a priority of mine to see him. You know, he told me that he was, you know, going to get done in the afternoon. And we agreed that we'd meet then on Tuesday morning. So I kind of, you know, felt that was good. I knew that Brian and Harry were going to be coming in later because they both played in San Francisco and obviously played the weekend. So then it was really getting in touch with Patton, watched him hit some balls. We got out, we played one and a bit holes, and then we got the weather came in, and you know, that was the Monday over. So really, you know, from then it was right, I'm going to see Will on Monday morning, or excuse me, Tuesday morning. Harris came in, and we just pretty much had a quick debrief on San Francisco, a conversation really about, you know, how the next 3 to 4 weeks needs to be themed. A couple of little, you know, pieces that, you know, I felt were pertinent points from San Francisco, you know, and kind of knew that, you know, Harris is playing very well. He doesn't, you know, he's not one of those guys he needs me to be around all the time. He just likes little pieces and to know what direction he's moving in. You know, and when Brian came in a little earlier than we thought he was going to come into on Tuesday, you know, I made a point of spending some time with him and his caddy, who is Scott Tway, and Scott's Bob Tway's brother. And, you know, Scott and I have a good relationship, you know, which I try and maintain with all the caddies, because they're a very important kind of link into, you know, how the player is and how the player's, you know, responding, executing, you know, what the mood is, you know, where the, you know, what the ball striking is like, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Scotty and I talked a little bit about San Francisco with regards to how Brian was doing. And we had a very, very open talk with Brian about, you know, some of the things that he can do a little bit better job of with his, you know, his mental game, really, the amount of mental mistakes. You know, we reaffirmed what a mental mistake is and went through some of that stuff with him. And, you know, I got an opportunity then to see Will on Tuesday. And whenever I lay it out all like that, I'm surprised I'm still sane at this point in time. But so as we, you know, we got through today, pretty much Wednesdays are, you know, it was interesting in San Francisco. There were some, Gary Woodland, who's another player I've been starting to help a little bit, played late on Wednesday. I'm quite used to most guys getting their work done early on a Wednesday and getting out of, you know, getting away from the facility. So, you know, this morning I got there just around about 7 o'clock, and watched all the players on the range, and then got out to see Harris play a couple of holes, and Will and Patton, who were playing together, get done. And, you know, Brian's theme, I spent more time with Brian yesterday. His theme for the week is pretty much stable, and he knew what he was doing. So I kind of left him to it, sent him a text, and was able to get out of there by about 3 o'clock, whenever you and I started texting one another.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about, you know, I don't know how you're saying either. I tell the story sometimes. I saw John Graham at the Players before they shut it down, and I was there early on, I think it was a Wednesday maybe, and there he is standing there. We saw each other, and I ran over and talked to him, and I was like, so well, how bad is your day today? You know, like, and he's like, well, you know, I got so-and-so from, you know, 7 to 9, and then I'm going to play 9 with so-and-so, and then I got to meet someone at 3, and then, you know, chances are so-and-so wants to do something at 6. And I was like, you guys put new meaning to working half days. I mean, you literally work half a day. I mean, you know, 12-hour days is nothing for you guys out there, especially when you have multiple players, and you know, those players expect your best, right? They want you to be polished, and you know, they don't really give a shit about the other players, right?
They don't care about the other players. No, but you know, and you know, of course, the Sea Island guys, they do care about each other. But when it comes down to it, you know, they need to get the most out of you. I think, you know, Butch Harmon and Claude have been, you know, mentors and friends of mine. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we try to instill in our staff, you know, in any of the facilities that I've, you know, that I've helped run, mm-hmm. is the anticipation of what a player needs. I mean, I think that, and that goes to your regular golf lesson as well. You've got to anticipate the needs of the people that come to see you, you know. So somebody might need, you know, Butch always says somebody might need a tap on the back. And I know this is, you know, this is not relevant in COVID times, but somebody might need a pat on the back, and other people might need a kick in the backside. And you know, you've got to be able to know, you know, through a combination of street smarts, golf smarts, experience, you know, how to know when to do that, and how to get on board with what they need. And, you know, you can, you know, when you've done it for a while, you kind of realize it. And there are times when, you know, time overlaps from player to player, and that's when you need to get back on the phone and you need to make sure that they realize that, you know, this was something that you couldn't avoid, and you know, you get ready for another meeting. Because, you know, the last thing you want them to ever feel, which they shouldn't, because I always, you know, I care about all the guys that I work for, is that they you know, they're not a big priority, and they all share a priority with you. And from my side, because my stuff's very much sort of individual based, you know, everybody's so different, and that's where, you know, that's where I get a lot of the satisfaction doing what I do.
Yeah. Let's start with, let me talk to you about Harris English. I talk a lot about Harris. I featured him on the show that I do for DraftKings. It's called The Matchup. And mm-hmm. I really went through thoroughly about Harris English and the improvement and the progress that he's been making. I think he's, you know, he's certainly in there for one of the more underrated players, I think, consistent players over the last 2 months. You look at him post-COVID, he came out, he missed the cut at the Schwab, but then he goes 17th at the RBC, 13th at Memorial, 18th at the 3M Open, 19th at the PGA. Mm-hmm. Statistically, if I just said these statistics to someone and I took the name off of it, you would instantly think of a name like, boy, that kind of sounds like, you know, maybe a Brooks Koepka or a Webb Simpson. You know, like, here's these stats. Check this out. Strokes gained off the tee right now going into this event, 36. Strokes gained approach, 36. Strokes gained around the green, he's 54th. Strokes gained putting, he's 14th. Strokes gained total, he's 8th. If I said to someone that's Webb Simpson, they would believe it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. they would believe that that's the kind of player that you're describing. I know you've been with him for 18 months. Can you give us a little insight just on the direction when you met Harris? You've clearly had a nice impact on him, on what you kind of laid out for him, and maybe to one or two changes that have really made a difference for him.
You know, I think, you know, Harris, again, going back to some of the things that Butch Harmon has taught me, you know, Harris has got a great pedigree. The first thing you need to do is do your kind of due diligence. He was a standout player as a junior, he was a standout player in college. He was a Walker Cup player, came out, won golf tournaments on tour. You know, you watch the reruns of, you know, tournaments he won in Memphis and I'm forgetting the other one. You know, and he's clearly somebody who's got a, you know, he's got a heck of a lot of talent. So, you know, then you start to see, you know, where do you think things went wrong? And certainly in his 20s, I think he gravitated towards, you know, asking for a lot of advice. And, you know, I really began by, you know, informing him that I didn't believe his fundamentals were very good. I think he'd been thinking about his golf swing too much, and I thought that he needed to start to recognize that as a golfer, he needs to trust his instincts. He needs to be the boss of his team. That's me, his caddy, his, you know, his wider circle of friends and family. You know, when it comes to his golf, he needs to start to take ownership, be the boss, and trust his instincts, because he's, you know, instinctively he must be, you know, he's one of the players of his generation. And I think that, I don't think anyone had ever kind of gone that route with him. It was more about, you know, this doesn't look right, so let's work on this part of his golf swing. So, you know, within that, you know, his agent, Jeremy Elliott, who lives in the island, who's become a, you know, a very good friend of mine, you know, we looked at a lot of old tape. We looked at things that he did, and his golf swing, you know, there's a uniqueness to Harris English's golf swing. He's very long-limbed. He's got a very unique set of shoulders. The way his shoulders work in transition and stuff is very different to some other players. So, you know, I really honed in on his alignment not being very good and trying to give him one consistent basis, which was the way the golf club moved from, you know, when he starts to working it up through the, you know, the early part of his takeaway into, you know, what I would, you know, I would talk about a third of the way or halfway back, you know, where the club needs to be a couple of club heads lengths outside of his hands, you know, with plenty of loft on it, because he's not a player who then rotates his shoulders on. He's very compressive and he's quite deep. And whenever he then changes direction, if he gets the takeaway part right, the club shaft can shallow as his hands pop out over the plane a little bit. And he's got a real good, strong, torquey rotation, and he can hit that little tumble fade that he hits. And as he started getting more consistency and then started to get a little bit more belief, you know, and a couple of results came, you know, then the thoroughbred kicks in. Then it's just about, you know, let him continue to do the things. And that's where sometimes as a coach, you need to tell them it's okay and get out of the way a little bit and let them start doing the things that they do. And that's where, you know, I haven't been walking a lot of holes with him on the golf course and things, because he said to me, look, whenever I know things are okay, I can go out and figure out how to play golf. And, you know, he's a really cool guy who's, you know, it's hard to believe he's only 30 years old, 31 years old now. Just
yeah, turned. Yeah, yeah. He won. Let's see, 2013. He won the St. Jude, and then he won in Mayakoba.
Yes.
So it's been a while, and he kind of went the wrong way there for a while. So it's been cool. Like, I've always been a Harris English fan. You know, the Georgia guys I tend to follow. And to your point, he's pretty dynamite on Bermuda grass putting.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. No, he's great. And he's, you know, he works with Ramon Bassana. I know you may know,
yes.
Ramon with the perfect,
yep,
putter and things. And, you know, Ramon's a great part of our team. And Harry's putting really throughout the period, you know, I'm really pleased to hear the putting stats. I haven't looked at them for 2 or 3 weeks, but I think he had a good week in San Francisco on the greens. You know, he had a few, couple of top fives early in the new season, as it were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think of the 16 events he's played, he's maybe had 11 top 20s, but I could be wrong. But I mean, that's, as you, to your point, that's extremely consistent high level golf, you know, because there's just, yeah, so many good players. And, you know, you get little draws and, you know, you might get the wrong side of the draw here and there, but, you know, for you to be notching up, you know, 10 or 12 top 20s out of 16 starts is high level stuff.
Let's take a second to talk about the guys and girls over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation of having the most cutting-edge technology in their golf balls that the industry has seen in quite some time. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is changing the script of golf technology through the perimeter-weighted designs, use of high-density particles, and even a nano-transitional layer in their latest creation, which offers players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course and extreme velocity off the tee. They already have their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, but the new Vero X1 is the highest performance ball to date. With their full suite of golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.
I think you're right. I'm counting them right now. I believe that's correct. Yeah, I mean, he was at the Greenbrier, sixth at Sanderson, fourth at Houston, fifth at OHL, ninth at Arnie's, which that place played brutal API, yeah, right before COVID. He's putted beautifully the last 2 weeks. He gained 5 strokes at the PGA.
That was great.
So he made
a little adjustment. Ramon noticed that he was coming across the ball a little bit with his putting, and we'd sort of talked about it a touch, and, you know, he's putting nicely, and then Ramon just encouraged him to kind of strengthen his right hand grip a little bit and drop his right elbow a little touch. And I think that really helped because he's got a great system, and he's very systematic. He enjoys his putting system. So, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, he can maintain the sort of themes that we've set aside. You know, Harry loves, he's a great sports fan. He kind of got away from knowing that he's an athlete, and you know, I talked to him as an athlete, and one of the conversations we had before he started to really, you know, get things going again was that, you know, if you're a quarterback, you know, and this is your team, your job is to run every play the best you can. Mm-hmm. And if you're out there and you're trying to hit a shot when you're a little concerned about the consequences of the shot, or you're worried about the points available or the money or whatever, that's you're not really running the play. You're not focused on it. You know, I think he gravitates towards that type of language, and that's why, as I've, you know, I recently moved to America, it's trying to get, you know, understand baseball, understand football. I can't talk to these guys about cricket and rugby because they're just going to look at me funny.
That's funny. Well, let's hope that the SEC doesn't, cancel football like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. But anyway, let's stay in the SEC for a minute. Will Gordon, who went to Vanderbilt. You know, I don't think most golf fans really know a whole lot about Will Gordon yet. I mean, he was tied for third at the Travelers. He's a long ball hitter. Like, he's 19th on tour. You can get it out there, 307.
Yeah.
Tell us, you know, what's Will Gordon like as a player and as a person as he emerges onto the scene?
Well, you know, it was an interesting thing. One of Will's agent came through, our guys down at Sea Island and asked me, would I just take a little look at his short game? And, you know, I've learned a great deal from Butch Harmon and Pete Cowan in Europe. So my short game stuff's pretty good, but it was just an interesting thing because it's not something that, you know, normally is the first thing. And we had a look at him chipping some golf balls in, I'm going to say, October of last year. And, you know, the chipping action wasn't very good. It was all quite raw. He'd obviously had a very successful college career and had an amazing amount of speed. You know, we got into that a little bit, and then he was turning the ball over. There was a lot of right to left. So it was almost like there was still a raw, you know, junior golfer kind of edge to Will that hadn't been kind of tidied up just yet. So, you know, we had a little intervention where we had a 10 finger grip when he's chipping and pitching, because he has so much load in the golf club. He gets so much lean, which is obviously where he gets a lot of his length from, that, you know, the 10 finger grip helps him just on almost like a slightly weaker left hand grip. As a right-hand golfer, it helps him just to kind of work the club with the movement of his body and keep the shaft working on plane a little bit better. So, you know, that initially helped him. We did a little bit of a similar kind of theme work on his takeaway just to try and get him a little bit more neutral with his ball flight. And then he came back. We did some more work, and then he had a nice run at the RSM, you know, in the winter of last year. And, you know, and this was quite cool. And he's starting to rev up a little bit then. He's starting to enjoy himself. And he went out, and I saw him at Torrey Pines. He played pretty good there. I think he was in the first. You know, and then obviously with, you know, this whole thing going on with COVID and stuff like that, you know, we kind of realized that, well, he's not going to go to Corn Ferry because he's not going to, you know, he therefore it would not be a, no chance to play in the PGA Tournament until he's 2022. Canada was playing is done, really. At that point, it was done. So the decision was made to try and, you know, get into a couple more PGA Tour events and use your sponsor's exemptions up. We went up to Hartford together, and, you know, he looked really, really good that week, really calm. And, you know, we saw him coming in there, hitting that beautiful little wedge shot into the last 2 feet and finished third. So, you know, he's now at a point where I can't remember the terminology they use. He's now got a temporary membership to the PGA Tour, and I believe in around about sort of 107th or 109th, he's got about 307 or 308 points. And, you know, I certainly think that he will have some sort of membership for next year, which,
yes,
you know, he's got 130 mile an hour club head speed. He's smart. he's very, he's a sponge. You know, he really wants to get the learning in quickly. And that's been, you know, that's worked for him and against him, but they have to learn. He had a bad Saturday in Reno, where he didn't, you know, he just didn't play well. He had that little challenge match up at 3M where he played with Matthew Wolf and guys, and I think it's his comfort zone a wee bit. And you know, we've talked about that a lot, but you know, he's accomplished an awful lot this year, albeit that the year is, you know, only going to be really a 9-month year, but he'll have accomplished an awful lot. You know, I would have high hopes. He's hitting the golf ball nicely. He's hungry to do well again, and it's been good to see him up here in Greensboro.
Yeah, yeah, he's a North Carolina kid. Went to Vandy. Big guy, 6'3", and you know, he's 24 years of age. And you look at him. This will be his 6-7. This will be his 9th start, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, these guys are just, you know, learning the golf courses. I mean, things are moving fast, you know, for these guys as they get out on the PGA Tour. And you mentioned the RSM. He was 10th. He was 21st at the Farmers, 3rd at the Travelers. He's missed the last two cuts. How much do you think about that as for a young player, you know, when they maybe, you know, because you're going to miss some cuts, right? I mean, it's going to happen as you get out there, especially when you're young and learning these golf courses. When they maybe put two or three together, as you've had with players in the past, how do you address that? Is that something that you kind of wait for the player to facilitate, or do you kind of come in and say, hey, this is just part of the deal. Let's keep moving forward. Trust the process. Off we go. Or is that kind of like person by person how you're going
to
handle that?
Yeah, it's probably more person by person. It's, you know, he's gone up there to Hartford and had a great time. And as soon as he missed up, you know, the second cut, you know, I said to him, did you see Justin Thomas at Hartford at the Travelers? He goes, no. And I said, well, Justin Thomas worked his tail off at the Travelers. I watched him and Mike and Jimmy working Monday, 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock, Tuesday same, Wednesday same. He's on the putting green. He's back on the range, missed the cut. I said, so if one of the best golfers, you know, at that point, one of the best golfers in the world can work his tail off all week and miss the cut. Yeah, anybody can miss a cut in the PGA Tour. They've got to know that it's okay. You know, everybody's good and everybody's trying. You know, and then they can start to look at it a little bit more objectively and say, okay, what could I have done better? You know, we talk a lot about winning the week or winning the days. Sometimes your week is going to offer you a 20th. And if you can then deliver that 20th, it's almost like a personal win. I didn't have it that week. I didn't hit it very well, or I didn't putt very well, but I got through it and I managed to, you know, shoot 67 on Saturday and limp home on Sunday and finish 21st. Well, that's a win sometimes. And I think if you can get them thinking like that, you know, I think, and it goes back to them thinking about their individuality and their responsibility to themselves to try and get the most out of every shot, then, you know, hopefully you can get the most out of them.
Well, I mean, let's talk about a missed cut and then what the next week can offer. And that would be with Michael Thompson, right? Who you also work with. Michael Thompson missed a cut at the Workday Charity Open. And then the next week, or no, I think it was, he didn't play Memorial. Then he went to 3M.
Yes.
His next outing, he wins.
Amazing.
Right? So he wins the 3M Open, just to show you what golf is. There's so much darn failure in this game, you know, Justin. And, you know, just learning how to handle that. And as a player, I mean, you know, there's just so much conversation around that. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Michael Thompson, have been for years. I know you work with him, and he rolls into the 3M Open and wins at 19 under par. And that had to be, for a teacher, how proud were you to see Michael Thompson in the winner's circle?
You know, when you work with great players, again, it was, you know, Butch said to me when I started working with tour players, and he's always, you know, I've always had his ear, and he said, JP, your biggest responsibility when you're working with tour players is don't screw them up. The fact that they're in the means that they're very good. So you've got to find a way just to make them a little bit better here and there. And you know, with Michael, it would think back to doing what he does best, which is getting a golf ball around a golf course. It really doesn't matter whether you're going into the green with a 7-iron or a 5-iron, because you're very precise. As long as you get the ball on the green, you're one of the best putters on tour. It doesn't matter what your swing looks like. It doesn't matter what people think about your golf swing. Your golf swing has already proven to be successful. Your feels have already proven to be successful because you've already won on tour. You were number one amateur in the world. You were a standout college player. Let's get back to doing the things you can do. And that's been, you know, that was the theme with Michael from the start, and he embraced that. In fairness to him, you know, we still can get distracted by, you know, playoffs and opportunities and all sorts of things, but at the end of the day, you know, he is at his very, very best when it's just Michael Thompson against the golf course. And you know, that was the big theme in going forward. You know, he talked about it in his press conference, just getting back to playing Michael Thompson golf. And Michael Thompson golf is, you know, it's not particularly showy. It's not, look at me, I'm going to hit this 3-iron off a downslope from 240 to, you know, Michael Thompson golf is, I'm going to smartly get my way around the golf course and play to my strengths. And I thought he did that admirably in, you know, up at 3M. I thought he was, I worked with Charles Schwartzel for a year or two, and Charles texted me, and he said how classy he was in his play, how classy he was in his winning of the tournament. And you know, it was a big thrill for me to, you know, to move to these shores and see somebody that I'm helping, you know, get across the line.
You got a lot of SEC guys, you know that, right, Justin? I mean, you know, of course Michael went to Alabama,
and yes.
And I'm just gonna throw this out at you. You know, Michael won the Honda course in 2013, and then he wins the 3M Open in 2020. Mm-hmm. 7 years later, the last win for Harris English was in 2013. So I'm just saying, like, he kind of got a little trend going here. These guys, Harris English could be the way he's playing. What I'm seeing in the eye tests and certainly statistically, he could be finding himself in a situation to win. What was cool about Michael for me was, you know, I mean, you know, you're out there, like, these guys have to be good situationally down the stretch, right? I mean, you look at the struggles Tony Finau has had late in tournaments to put events away that I've talked about. And then Michael Thompson steps into the arena situationally and hits some incredible shots down the stretch. I think the par four out of the bunker was 16.
Yeah, it was 16. That was shot of the year for me that so far, I think.
I mean, that was unbelievable, that shot. So, you know, you got to hit some shots right down the stretch and put them away. And I thought that was what was really cool for me, was to see him, someone who, you know, look, kind of got back in the heat of the moment there, had to hit some shots down the stretch, and he did. He put it away. I mean, he 64, 66, 68, 67. That's going to get it.
It's golf, isn't it? Yeah, it's good.
That's going to get it done at most places. You know, it's cool to see Michael Thompson, Brendan Todd, guys that are not overpowering golf course have success.
I loved that Morikawa won, because I think that, you know, for me, and like, you know, it's this is only a personal opinion, I think there's something fantastic about great iron players who can fit a shot to a flag and judge the wind and judge the slope and the firmness of the greens and all of the things that go into it. I think there's something incredibly skillful and athletic and rewarding to watch and even to listen to what Morikawa is really good at is the way I enjoy golf.
Sorry, my kids just interrupted the podcast there, so for the
that's a good moment.
Yeah, my listeners understand. So
that's all right. I've got two as well, so
you, I know the feeling. 5 and 4 year old.
Right, I've got an 8 and a 5, so yeah, I'm a wee bit in front of you.
Let's talk about two more players here. I don't know how you keep track of all these guys, but I know you spent some time with Louis Oosthuizen, and then also Gary Woodland, who we will see both of them, right? At TPC yep. Boston, they'll be in the field. Mm-hmm. And for TPC Boston, Northern Trust, terrific golf course. Give us a little insight to Gary. You know, Gary is, I mean, first off, he's lost 20 pounds. I mean, he pretty much gave it to Bryson, and he looks very thin. What's your take with Garrett? Kind of maybe a little up and down, right? We've seen some him show up and then go away. You know, where's he at, do you feel, going into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, we just, you know, I was approached. It was the back end of workday. Gary was struggling a little bit with his golf. He'd kind of gone out to Vegas and spent a bit of time with Butch. Butch ain't traveling anymore. He's playing some golf and enjoying himself and drinking some of his nice red wine out there, and he's chilling out. Pete Cowan, who's been a great mentor to me as well. Pete and Butch were both asked, you know, if there's somebody around who they would trust to keep an eye on Gary's golf swing, who would it be? And they both said me, which is very flattering. And so we really worked and I got to know what he was doing. Again, got a little bit of kind of setup work done. I felt, you know, Gary's got a great amount of speed and power, and he's a superb athlete, but he was getting a lot of, you know, a real lot of down cock in his golf swing, which he does from time to time, and it was kind of separating his arms away from his body. And so we started, you know, the process of that. You know, he played okay at Memorial. There were spurts there in San Francisco where he looked very good, but you know, that relationship really is just in its infancy. I'm getting to know. I had an hour on the phone with his trainer down in Miami yesterday, who also trains LeBron James, I believe, and is a fantastic, you know, technical, athletic trainer. So I, you know, I'm trying to, you know, glean anything I can just to kind of help Gary along, getting used to, you know, his caddy Brennan Little, who's a good player in his own right. And you know, so that's more of a building thing. Gary and I are going to have a conversation tomorrow. I'm on my way back up and see where we take things. But you know, he's a very athletic player. He doesn't want to know everything about golf and golf swings and things like that. He wants to actually just play the game.
Yeah.
And you know, therefore you have to respect that and be able to get your work that you want done without overwhelming him or making him think too much. Because if, you know, guys like that, they start thinking about it too much and there are a lot of different little swing thoughts and voices in their head, they don't perform very well. And I think you're going back to some of Butch Harmon's stuff. That's where he was a master of things, because he would take those real, you know, those athletic, you know, through the years and keep it simple for them so that they can go out. You know, Claude said a great thing a couple of months ago on a podcast. He said the game of golf is so complicated that the swing mustn't overcomplicate the game. And I thought that was a really, really good way of kind of articulating, you know, the way that our instruction business needs to be. You know, if you're out there thinking about two or three, four positions or things in your golf swing, well, how are you going to be able to read your lie and see where the wind's going from, you know, and be able to figure out, you know, how you're going to respond to a couple of bad holes and stay in your process and all the things that we know that they need to do. So, you know, that's certainly where we need to go with Gary.
Yeah, it's overdone, right? You know, the golf swing and, like, you know, the painting the picture to the amateur player that they need to be, you know, strapped up into 24 sensors to get better is a little absurd. You know, it's like, sure. I mean, the information is great, but you know, at the end of the day, like, it is a game, like you said, you have to play. And at that level, man, those guys, man, they got to be instinctive and playing, and, you know, it can be tricky. There's no perfect manual for it. But what's interesting with you, Justin, is you've had such great, tutelage with Butch and Pete, you know, that, you know, I think you're poised to really just have such a, you know, with your own take, right, and your own beliefs and the things that you implement. But you've learned from two darn good guys, man, that have had a ton of success out there.
Yeah, and it's been, and that's, you know, going back to, you know, what you said about information, when you look at, I get, you know, when you look at, you know, great medical professionals or for that matter, fitness professionals, people like that, the information doesn't always have to be regurgitated at every step, if you know what I mean. That's, you know, that's where I, you know, I see us falling down a little bit. It's like, just because you know a lot of stuff, you don't have to tell everybody.
Yeah,
you can tell the people what they need to know in order for them to get better at the game. When, you know, you and I can have a conversation about 3D and about, you know, all sorts of different things, but you know, the average person or professional player don't necessarily need to know everything. And if they do know, you know, once they know an awful lot of stuff, then they can never unknow it, and it can become detrimental to them.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting. It's going to be it's interesting to just to see how our how our industry has evolved for sure. And will continue, you know, with technology and all of these gadgets and different things that you can use to learn about your student and being able to filter through all that and just but still present it in a way to your audience, whether it's a tour player or whether it's a 20 handicap, that's going to be beneficial, you know, to them. I think about that a lot, and hopefully we continue to position it the right way. But hey, I really appreciate your time, and I know you're a busy man on this, and I'm a fan of your work, and I'm really, you know, pulling for you and your players, and in particularly Harris this week, just because if you watch the matchup show, you know, you know that I've been pulling Harris English along here, like, hey guys, you got to pay attention to this guy because he's really coming. I'm sensing a win here again, number three on the PGA Tour to match what Michael Thompson did there back in the 3M Open. But
what you said about the 2013 to 2020 thing has, you know, it's certainly if you know, next time I can be speaking to you, we can kind of keep that little, you know, keep that run alive. I would be nothing would give me more pleasure because, you know, Harris is, you know, a fabulous player. You know, he's just a great sportsman, and he's a good lad to boot. So yeah, that'd be cool to see him win one.
And he's a Georgia Bulldog, and let me tell you something, I'm surrounded by him here.
There you go. Right.
I mean, he's from Valdosta originally, I believe.
That's right.
And my wife went to Valdosta State. So it's like I have no choice. Okay. I mean, I have no choice in theirs, but I generally obviously like Harris English. He's a great dude and sportsman, and we'll be pulling for him. We'll be watching him this week, as we'll be watching Louis and Gary as well. Best of luck with them, and I can't thank you enough for your time, Justin.
Thank you so much, Travis. That was fun. Okay.
As the 8-game regular season is coming to an end, teams are still jockeying for the final few playoff spots, and while the players are bringing the action on the course, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is bringing the action to you with huge daily fantasy contests every day. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to its players, so they know a thing or two about a big payday. If you haven't tried it yet, fantasy basketball is easy to play. Just pick a player, stand to the salary cap, and pile up points for three-pointers, rebounds, assists, and more. There's no better way to put your basketball knowledge to the test than to compete for a share of millions of dollars. In addition to this week's basketball action, there is a huge MMA contest this weekend with some of the sport's biggest names stepping into the spotlight. To celebrate this huge event, DraftKings is giving new users a free shot at $1 million in total prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use the promo code Travis to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes for this week's daily fantasy contest. That's promo code Travis to get a shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.